Hello, and welcome back to Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies with me, Lisa Schmeiser.
And I'm your host, Philip Michaels.
As you can see, we're off to a mutually respectful start with our conversation.
As always.
Yes, Phil, I think it's your turn to pick the topic for our podcast. What is it going to be tonight?
Well, Lisa, some people have said that we're a super team.
Oh, really?
No, no one has said this. It's a segue. It's a bit. It's a buildup.
Oh.
Some people, Lisa, have said that we're a super team. Perhaps a team of Earth's mightiest heroes. I'm talking, of course, Lisa, about the Avengers.
You sound like William Shatner.
He's not in the Avengers.
Is he one of the voices in your head telling us that we're one of the teams? The
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Just so we're clear.
Lisa, I think that we should talk about Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it's been out for a month.
Yes.
I have seen it.
As timely as the headlines.
I have seen it.
Ripped from today's headlines if today was May.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, would you like to share why you didn't see the Avengers?
I do not care for superhero movies anymore. I do not care for comic book movies. We, last year, went to go see Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
a really respectable outing.
It's a finely produced movie, and it has some really well filmed chase scenes. And I hated it because most of the movie, the climax of the movie is basically the destruction of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Things falling from the sky, and
you kind of wish there had been an epilogue where it's 6 months later and everybody is stuck in the soup bowl around Springfield.
Yeah, and. No society would recover from...
Especially after New York.
Right.
We should also add that you watched that right after we had just finished watching The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight Rises.
The third
movie where... Bane, Batman, I come to you today.
And watching The Wreckage of Gotham. And you actually... I wish I could reproduce the monologue in all its glory, because it really was... Almost Oscar-worthy, but basically what it came down to is you said you were just really tired of the wholesale destruction of cities being used as entertainment.
I really grow tired of that.
It's fortunate you didn't see the Avengers, because they hit like four out of the major continents, and Antarctica escaped unscathed, which is good news.
Good for them.
Not
enough things to go bloom there, I guess.
And South America escaped unscathed.
Yes.
But I believe there was wholesale destruction through North America, Europe, Africa, and Asia.
Well, all very important markets for Hollywood.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And as a matter of fact, if you want to talk, it's no longer the destruction of cities. They actually destroyed an entire country in this movie.
Cool.
No,
gotta up your game.
No, not cool.
Gotta up your game.
Not very cool at all.
No, but just to conclude my point, seconds before this podcast was concluded, I was watching a movie called Scaramouche.
Did you do the Fandango?
I did not. Thunderbolts and lightning did not frighten me, Galileo. But
Magnifico.
It's this 1952 swords and tights movie with Stuart Granger and Mel Ferrer and Janet Leigh in a bodice.
Eleanor Parker
also in a bodice.
Who walks away with the movie.
She does.
Oh my gosh, she's marvelous.
Anyhow, the climax of that movie is not the destruction of Paris, but rather a 7-minute sword fight between Stuart Granger and Mel Ferrer. And it's very enjoyable, and it's very intense. And even for a 1952 movie, it just seems to me... Too many directors nowadays go, oh, what are we going to do? We were watching TV today, and a trailer came on. I forget which movie it was. Oh, The Terminator.
Yeah.
Where, again, the Golden Gate Bridge gets destroyed. I believe this is the third movie out this year that destroys the Golden Gate Bridge.
Here is the movie I want to see. Mm-hmm. I want to see the movie where you actually have a monster come to San Francisco, and they manage to duck under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Uh-huh.
And they duck under the Bay Bridge, and they get to the San Mateo Bridge. And they're like, no, this is just too long. I can't, no.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. And they turn around. They swim back and they maybe go victimize Santa Cruz.
In my movie, they destroy the Dumbarton Bridge and Silicon Valley executives are inconvenienced. It's a comedy.
Yeah. Well, they would just ask Elon Musk to invent them some sort of bridge-spanning technology that the rich and privileged and deserving could use. But let's not get to class politics. Let's get back to how fortunate it is that you did not see the Avengers.
Yes.
Because it opens, honestly, with the kind of scene that you would hate. And to be honest, and I want this out there, I'm a huge fan of the Marvel movies for the most part. I hated the opening. It felt a whole lot like that senseless destruction of Paris scene in Team America.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, no, it literally starts off with the Avengers committing mayhem across the fictitious...
That would be Matt Stone and Trey Parker's Team America.
Yeah.
The one with the puppets.
The one with the puppets. And it was like, well, and there's like crazy effects off the top of the bat in the Avengers, and they go flying across the landscape, and all I could think was, these are puppets, and they're going to blow up Paris, and there's going to be an anthem here. And I guess that they opened up the film with the Avengers fighting with such brutal efficiency because this is supposed to show you that rah-rah teamwork, and it beats having, like, a Rocky II montage where they all go on the Muppet Show and and jump rope together.
While Survivor plays.
Exactly, yes.
It was Rocky III.
Okay, thank you.
But
I've only ever seen the montage once. It was in a hotel room. My dad explained to me that I couldn't get excited about the Muppets because they were about to leave the screen for Sylvester Stallone. I was 10 or 11 at the time.
But Mr. T's coming on.
And I was terribly confused because A-Team might like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Any little, the point is, I saw The Avengers, you didn't. Do you have any questions for me about the movie?
Yes, I do. Okay. So I understand they've added some X-Men to the movie, like a guy from the X-Men movie is there.
So here is the deal. Because of the legal shenanigans with Fox having rights to the X-Men and the Marvel Studios not having the rights to the X-Men, they introduced two people, or I should say two metahumans, who have been turned that way due to the experiments that they've undergone.
I think DC is serving you with a cease and desist order for using metahumans. Isn't that a DC term?
I
have no idea. I don't really care.
Actually, yeah, in The Flash, but they don't call them Inhumans in the movie, or maybe they just call them lab experiments. Anyway, long story short, they can't call them mutants in the MCU-verse, and so...
Oh, I see.
So, basically, they have to write off Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch as, oh, they're war orphans, who were orphaned by Tony Stark's weapons, by the way, and then they volunteered for experiments with Hydra, because when you're vengeful Eastern European children, that's what you do, and, they turned her into Hot Topic, and they tried to make us believe that he runs.
Mm. And yes, you were watching Godzilla yesterday, in which the actor who plays Quicksilver,
Aaron Taylor,
is in that, and
Aaron Taylor Johnson is in that as well.
I will save your crueler taunts for the privacy of our conversations. Suffice it to say, you are not a fan of his, or a believer in his ability to run fast,
no,
or
no,
so, take a flight of stairs without breathing heavy at the top. Or no.
Well, I think Aaron Taylor Johnson suffers due to circumstances, and the circumstances are, this is the year
he likes pie.
Yeah, well, we all do. This is the year that The Flash hit the CW, and the actor that they've cast to play Barry Allen, Grant Gustin, legitimately looks like somebody who can sprint. Like, Grant Gustin is built like a greyhound.
Yep, and personable.
And he's incredibly personable.
And one of the few comic book franchises I can stand at present, because it's lighthearted.
Yeah, and they actually don't do a whole lot of wholesale destruction.
And they don't do a whole... But it's in the service of story. And
to
not
get
just,
back to the Avengers, Aaron Taylor Johnson, like, they basically have him pimped out like a member of the Russian mafia in a tracksuit with sneakers, and he looks like a fullback for the Queen's Park Rangers.
Okay, now I'm interested in seeing this
movie.
And
he's got like a mullet, and every time you watch him try to run, like, there is not enough CGI, there is no render farm in North America large enough to produce the CGI that would make me believe that this dude was built for speed in any believable way.
Mm-hmm.
They really needed to cast, they needed to cast somebody who was like believably sprinty, and they didn't do it here. So there's that going on, which I found horribly distracting the whole time.
So I understand Black Widow is a Hulk mommy now? Raising her Hulk baby?
That sounds so weird and sick.
It was phrased intentionally.
Wow, it sounds weird and sick. So the way it works is Bruce Banner now has control over his Hulk transformations, in theory. And I guess the cue to get him to... snap out of being the Hulk and come back down to reality is the Black Widow says, oh, it's getting dark out, and do you want me to sing you a lullaby? And the Hulk kind of chillaxes and then turns back into Bruce Banner. So clearly there's some sort of, like, what it seemed obvious to me that, one, somebody in the Avengers has said, okay, behavior modification and talking to the Hulk is what's going to work here. And two, who is he going to respond to? And we saw in the first movie that when given the opportunity, he's going to punch Thor through the wall.
As would we all.
Yeah. And Iron Man's not going to be able to do it. Honestly, to me, Black Widow made great tactical sense because her whole shtick is that she can get inside somebody's head and then use it to her advantage.
You know, and that, in this case, her advantage is not being crushed by Hulk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, she's the type of character who faces down her fears and does penance for them. And in the first movie, she was seen as being terrified of the Hulk, and with good reason. And so I thought, okay, this is a way for her, you know, this is a way for her to use her natural skill set and to conquer her fear at the same time. It made sense to me. Like, I didn't see it as a mother-child thing so much as I saw it as a tactical thing framed in a way that a primal rage monster could understand. But there's another development later in the movie where it does get kind of problematic because the Black Widow develops the world's... Well, it's an understandable crush, but there's no chemistry between the actors. Anyway, long story short, the Black Widow's making goo-goo eyes at the Hulk, or rather Bruce Banner. And when they all end up at Hawkeye's farmhouse, there's this little scene...
I have more questions!
Okay, would you like to hold the questions? Or do you want me to
Well, I understand the Hawkeye convinced a woman that he was interesting enough to marry. How did that work?
Okay, so I once played a game of Mary Have Things to Do with Kill with my friend Aaron,
mm-hmm.
where we went through two bottles of wine and weighed the pros and cons of all the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, we actually concluded that Hawkeye would make a decent spouse because he'd always be traveling on business trips and he'd have a lot of alone time.
Mm.
So, you know, there is
Wait a minute.
You know, sometimes you just want to watch what you want to watch on TV.
Sure. Yeah. Not Scar... It isn't Scaramouche.
No, that was not my idea.
No.
So, anyway, I have no idea what the behind-the-scenes shenanigans here were, but Joss Whedon took an element from The Ultimates, too, in which we do get to meet The Ultimates. In Ultimates 2, Hawkeye, you do get to meet his partner. And their three kids, and then it all goes horribly pear-shaped. In the movie, they give him the partner and the three kids, and it does not go immediately pear-shaped. What it does instead is it's supposed to drive home to the Avengers the fact that this person they've been fighting with for 3 years has been hiding his greatest tactical weakness from them.
Mm.
They don't see it that way, though. Instead, like, Bruce Banner and Natasha have this whole, oh, we could never have a normal life like this, and Bruce is like, I don't really see the point of getting with you, Natasha, because I can't give you a farmhouse and three kids. And she's like, well, I was engineered by Soviets to not have them anyway, so I'm cut off from humanity as it is. Why can't
they
we
They can
just-
be dinks, double income, no kids. They
I
can,
know, they
can
could
go,
sleep in.
They could sleep in, they could go on trips.
Yes.
They don't have to go to PTA meetings.
They could have white sofas.
Yeah.
And, like, I just don't get... But anyway, the thing
No, they couldn't because of the whole Hulk thing.
Well, she can do the thing outside, and then it goes back in. And, you know, just get slipcovers you can wash. But there were people who found the whole, I can't have children seem problematic, because it seems like Natasha's busy mooning around Hawkeye's ridiculous farmhouse, all, I can't have this. But the way I had actually seen the scene was, she's been pretty upfront with, I was taken from my home at a young age, I was turned into a living weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And if that isn't enough to cut you off from humanity, what the people who handled her then did is they literally severed her link to the chain of humanity that stretches back and forth in both directions. Because one of the most primal, fundamental things you can do as a human being is to, you know, propagate the species. You know, you then add another link to the chain that you come from, and you join this great human experience of passing it on. And to get personal for a moment, when we were dealing with infertility for 5 years, one of the things that I found to be the most difficult was the idea that my biology had said to me, you're done. This is it. You know, I don't think you're worth passing on. Like, that was something, you remember I had a really hard time with that, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So, the way I saw the scene with Bruce and Natasha is they're both really struggling with the fact that they had literally been built to be cut off from the people they so desperately want to be with. I didn't see it as Natasha being, if only I could have three green babies with really bad tempers or whatever. But, you know, some people did. And it is a little problematic when you have one woman in a movie and she has the conversation about how she can't have kids, as opposed to, say, Steve Rogers looking around the farmhouse and going,
everyone I've ever known is dead.
Everyone I wanted to put a baby in is dead.
Yes.
They hit menopause back during the Nixon administration.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Tony Stark going, Well, no. Or something like that. But to get back to, I actually found the Hawkeye...
To get it lighthearted again.
Yeah, no, I found the Hawkeye thing problematic on a couple levels.
Yeah.
The first being, why did we get no inkling of this in the first movie? Because if you are a vengeful ice demon half-brother of Thor who decides to invade Earth and you have hijacked Hawkeye's mind, wouldn't it be easy to keep him in mind all, by the way, I can kill your wife and kids. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's no mention of that whatsoever. Literally none. And there's no follow-up on that in this movie where his wife's like, well, you haven't had any screaming fits in 2 weeks or you know.
So maybe Loki just... assume that no person would want to hang around with Hawkeye for any period of time.
I think you're confusing Hawkeye with the actor here.
Oh, well, sure. There is that. Hawkeye, you have the charisma of a plant. No, obviously no woman would marry you, or man neither.
He's all, no, the internet says otherwise. Mm. But the other thing I was thinking is, honestly, if I were Captain America, I'd be super peeved about this, because if you have a wife and kids that you were hiding from the team, that's a tactical disadvantage. That's leverage that people could use against you that you're not telling your teammates about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to be 100% transparent and on the table here. Like, no secrets. And, like, a wife and kids that you're like, well, this was a condition of me coming into S.H.I.E.L.D. was that Nick Fury had to keep them completely off the grid, and there's no official record of them existing, blah, blah, blah. If it means that much to you, then you actually need to tell, like, the five other people on the planet who can defend them.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was just a dumb move.
That goes back to our problem with Iron Man 3,
mm-hmm.
Which was also instrumental in my no more superhero movie
ban. When they blew up Malibu?
Yeah. When they blew up Malibu, but that was our big problem with that movie, as you recall, was mm-hmm. why isn't he trying to page the other Avengers here?
Yeah.
This happens after the Avengers. Why is he not trying to raise Captain America on the phone?
Yeah. Why isn't Natasha calling and saying, next time don't give out your address on national television?
Mm-hmm.
No, this is actually going to be a bigger problem as the MCU goes forward. Is you have all of these different people who, in this movie, are shown to have a tremendous rapport and friendship, and they spend time together and hang out. And that is the other thing that bugged the crap out of me about the Hawkeye thing, is if I'm married to some dude who's running around with a freaking crossbow all the freaking time, and then he's like, well, I would love to come back, wife with two kids and one cooking, but I have to party with Tony Stark for a while first. Like, there's no way that marriage is healthy enough to produce a third kid. I was like, who wrote this? Dude, what do they know about married life?
So another reason why I'm reluctant to embrace the Marvel movies in particular is that from an outsider's perspective,
mm-hmm.
they feel like they exist just to create more movies.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism.
To go back in time. I never really caught into the second Back to the Future movie, because
mm-hmm.
it seems to exist merely to offer a reason for the third movie to exist.
Oh, I don't think I've ever actually seen two or three.
Yeah.
So as far as I'm concerned, it's just one glorious spike in the
80s. One great movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And then two trailers.
Yeah. So, no, there were, don't get me wrong, I'm going to have to go back and see Ultron again, because the battle scenes were incoherent enough where I legitimately had no idea what was going on half the time.
Well, that is something that you always want to reward in a filmmaker, when they make incoherent battle scenes.
Maybe I'll just wait for it to come on iTunes and rent it.
Yes.
But James Spader is phenomenal in it. Like, if anyone was born... Like, I should explain that if anyone was born to play a supercilious, super genius killer robot, it really is James Spader.
This is just the decade of Spader, though.
Oh, my God, no. All of the decades should be the decade of Spader. I don't understand why we had a Spader shortage.
Yeah.
Truly.
We had a paucity of Spader, and now it's Spader...
A surfeit of Spader.
And now it's Spader's salad days. Spader in his prime.
It's a Spader extravaganza.
Yes.
Yes.
The director, Joss Whedon.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan, Lisa? He said, knowing full well the answer to this question. Yeah, I just want to take a drink, so I want you to go on at length. Go on, I have to mix me another.
The things I do to make sure you can get in a couple of Manhattans during the course of a podcast. I have a complicated relationship with this dude.
Mm. Joss Whedon, not me.
No, I have a complicated relationship with you too, but
what?
I don't have a podcast called Lisa DeSaxer.
We Lisa and Joss Whedon dish on Phil will be the next podcast.
Oh, God. No, because I don't want to deal with Joss Whedon fans.
Okay.
The reason I have a complicated relationship with Joss Whedon is because I can enjoy parts of his work, but I feel like I can see the formula way too clearly. And the formula, he's not creative enough with the elements to switch them up or change them. And that's something that it angers me that I'm like, okay, you're going to have a lead female who's, you know, damaged in some way, but everyone thinks she's wonderful and she builds a pseudo family of people around her who think she's great, and you're going to have a guy who's terrible with women, but he's quippy and wisecracky and has a big heart, and you're going to have a big handsome jerk who has to learn how to be human. And there's a lot of formulas that were consistent across his TV shows. He's brought some of that to the films, I think.
I think his biggest problem is that he depending on whether you like his particular brand of dialogue.
Yeah. Sounds alike.
He does dialogue. He does scenes where it's just two people talking, but I don't think he has a vision for painting a big picture or showing the action. And I think that goes to your point with the incomprehensible action scenes.
Yeah, cuz the quiet scenes between a few people were great. Even if I felt like they didn't make sense or had no right to be there, because to be frank, I really could give a crap about the conversations Hawkeye has with his wife. I find their whole marriage baffling to begin with. But they had nice scenes together, Linda Cardellini and Jeremy Renner. They really played off each other nicely. Sure. The Scarlett Johansson stuff, she brought the A-game, of course. And the scenes between Mark Ruffalo and Robert Downey Jr. were great. Mm-hmm. And the tension, also I should point out that Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. do a great job of bringing a lot of tension to their scenes together too. It's really nice how they've built up the backstory in some way. So I think that Whedon excels on a small scale, but you basically had a movie that was just one huge battle scenario after another. And at one point in the movie, I was like, oh, Christ, isn't it over yet? Because there was just so much point, which is never something you want to think in a movie, right? And I was like, oh, God, is it over?
They should make a David Mamet's Avengers.
Coffees for Heroes.
Yes. We're going to go do the thing. Which thing? The thing in New York? No, the other thing. The thing. Hey, take your hammer up and let's go and do the thing. I just want to know. Listen, Thor.
Hammers are for heroes. Yes. Well, as long as we're
I made that like half as filthy as it could have been.
Well, I was going to say remarkable lack of F bombs and no Campbell Scott. No Rebecca Pidgeon in your version either.
No, well, she would be Black Widow, quite obviously. In David Mamet's Avengers.
Well, see, this is actually why I want to see the Coen Brothers Avengers, is because my secret hope is that they make that, and then you have John Goodman as Thanos. Well, I'm just going to have to do this myself, he said. It would be delightful.
Yeah.
You could have Steve Buscemi as Nick Fury instead.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would look... You could look at him and say, yeah, he's plausibly been in tons of wars and he's unhinged now, you know?
John Turturro is Loki.
Yes, and okay. you could give Chris Hemsworth the hair that the dude wore in The Big Lebowski.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Or you could do Woody Allen's... Woody Allen's The Avengers, where it's just Captain America wandering around like...
No, it's Woody Allen making the moves on Scarlett Johansson. Mm. And she thinking to herself, am I ever going to kiss a leading man under the age of 50?
It's just the thing you know about the emotional attachment.
You know, Woody Allen's Avengers would basically be him plotting himself as he watches Midtown go up in flames with the Chitauri. That would be him looking out the window going, what is this?
It would feature Stan Lee walking by and going, you know nothing of my work.
Excelsior! I think in some ways Whedon had an almost impossible task, because he was being asked to write and direct a movie that effectively drew in like 7 preceding movies and set the stage for another 5 to come after it. And by the way, it has to have plenty of action scenes so that we can launch the commercial tie-ins and make toys that little children would play with and so on and so forth. I honestly think Quentin Tarantino would have done a better job at the fight scenes, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
I'm not a huge fan of his, but, you know, obviously, you look at...
Kill Bill.
Your Kill Bill and your Django Unchained and your Inglourious Basterds. And he knows how to film a fight scene.
He has an eye for balletic mayhem that I don't think Whedon has. you know, there are other, well, I think the only Avengers I honestly would not ever want to see is Kevin Smith's Avengers.
Oh, no.
No.
No. Because it would just, all the Avengers would be fat, and women would love them.
Captain America's in jorts.
Yes. Instead of fighting Ultron, let's just smoke out and talk about comic books. But Ultron, we are a comic book.
I think Ultron would commit suicide after being forced to put up a Jay and Silent Bob.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how they defeat him. I'm going to kill myself rather than be around you for another second.
Well, I watched some
episodes. Ultron, that's not in the script. No, this is James Spader talking. I really don't like being here.
Yeah, no, I watched some of Pacific Rim again this week. And oh my gosh, that movie.
I enjoyed that because that's actually. There are so many flaws and caveats to my. I don't like watching cities being destroyed. Me, I'm sensitive.
But I
did enjoy Pacific Rim because at least it's an original story that sprung out of some guy's head and isn't like. Some studio, like, how do we market this kaiju thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was, that was another movie where the violence was done where you could get the scale and the impact, and more importantly, you concentrated on two or three players.
Right.
And, that we're told, I think the problem is this Avengers was just kind of too big as a movie, and, the fact that they're, like, breaking up the next installment into two really bodes ill, so...
So what we're saying here is that if you've seen the Avengers, you've wasted your life. Is that the conclusion that you want the listener to draw, Lisa?
No, because
you should be more like Phil, who has not seen the Avengers and lives the life of the mind.
To be fair, this is actually Thor's best outing.
It is a low bar for him to clear.
Oh, ow.
I've seen Thor 2 Dark World. Another.
Did you?
Yes, yes.
With me?
In our house.
What, really?
You were watching it, and I
were you were in the room, but that doesn't mean you're watching it.
No, I was watching near it.
Yeah,
it's hard to avoid.
It's incomprehensible.
It sucks you in.
Yeah,
and doesn't let you go.
Yeah, no, it's in the back quarter of that movie is just incomprehensible.
Yeah,
yeah, but Chris Hemsworth, you can't take your eyes off him. I mean, he was the best thing in Austrian Melton Expensive Cars.
Oh man. The movie is called Rush.
Okay.
The Austrian is still alive.
He's not listening to this podcast.
He may well be, and we apologize.
To the Lauda.
To Niki Lauda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's got bigger things on his plate than... That's basically...
Perhaps he loves movies.
That's basically perhaps the this gist is the, of the movie is perhaps, that Austrians melt in expensive cars while Chris Hemsworth goes, ha-ha, and has beautiful teeth.
Perhaps this is... His escape from the fact that he had this horrible trauma
English
in the
70s. English is like his fourth language. I'm pretty sure that listening to our podcast is way down the list.
You know, he challenges himself. This is how he was able to be a race car driver, is he goes, I think I'm going to find an interesting podcast to listen to today.
Yes, and now this podcast has degenerated into Formula One fanfic. I apologize to everyone who thought we were talking about movies.
Michael Schumacher's coming over. I want him to know that I've seen some movies, and Sebastian Vettel, I'm going to call
He's
him.
He's
going
to read Vulture or the AV Club.
Okay. Very well.
Yeah, reading is efficient, man.
I think that you should aim big. I think that you should want Niki Lauda to be in our audience. What if he becomes a fan and then listens to the back episodes and then...
I think you'd agree that he melted in that expensive car.
Okay.
That was the set piece of the movie.
As the host of this podcast, I want to apologize to people who have melted in cars.
And by the way, Rush is an amazing movie, if only because you look at it, and number one, Chris Hemsworth actually does a credible English accent, which was something I was honestly unaware he could do, having sat through two Thor movies. And two, it's a touching story.
I think it
falls prey to the Ron Howard weaknesses.
Yeah, it's...
But... Like, Ron Howard likes his characters so much that he gives them room to be good guys.
It is the most Ron Howard of your Ron Howard movies.
No, I thought that the relationship between the two dudes was really nuanced.
Yeah.
And if it happens to be on cable, TiVo it, or catch it later.
Yeah, no,
it's a nice way to spend a couple hours.
Don't burn your TV if it happens to be on. It just wouldn't be my...
Yeah.
If you're going to watch a Ron Howard movie, watch Apollo 13, because that's a good movie.
Also, there's Bill Paxton in it.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, was the best thing about season one of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because the weakness of that series is that all the villains get all the best lines.
Well, sure.
The snake always gets the best lines. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I saw Avengers. You did not. I think we both won in that exchange.
Yep.
There were previews for Tomorrowland in that, which...
is out now.
Yeah, it's out. My mom saw it. And,
oh, did she?
Yeah.
Phil and Lisa's mom ruins the movies will be our next spinoff podcast.
No, my mom doesn't really ruin movies.
Oh.
And
so do they have the people mover in that? Do they have the...
Yes, they do.
Oh, God, they actually base the rides. And
well, they do have a people mover, yes.
Oh.
It's...
Does he go on a mission to Mars?
No, they don't.
Does America sing?
No, and there's no Space Mountain.
Oh, well, then.
And there's no Hall of Presidents.
Well, you can tell that my lovely wife Lisa grew up on the East Coast because mm-hmm. the Hall of Presidents is not a Disneyland thing.
No, that's I saw it all the time in Disney World though because
yeah.
I went to the Florida one. Anywho, the point is I saw the preview for Tomorrowland, which looks weirdly soulless.
Mm.
Mostly because it's one of these. Well, it's one of these
things. Film critics would agree with you.
Well, because it was like, why should we? It was basically we talented people have created a utopian bubble to create a better future, and you normals resent us for it. Mm. Like that was the ethos of the trailer.
That happens a lot in Brad Bird movies, doesn't it?
Which is ironic because when I read the Ed Catmull book about Pixar, he was like, look, creativity is a completely democratic process and good ideas and creativity can come from anywhere and we welcome it in all shapes and sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a really, I find it fascinating that those two approaches exist under the same roof. There was also a preview for the Jurassic Park movie.
As discussed on previous podcasts.
And, oh my God, it's Chris Pratt hanging out with the Velociraptors and I'm never going to not be jarred by that. And they have this shot where he's going through the jungle on a motorcycle, and the raptors are keeping up with him, and it's not clear to me whether or not the raptors are also on motorcycles. And I kind of hope they are, because that would make the movie really awesome, is if the raptors learned how to ride motorcycles and became Sons of Anarchy.
I'm torn on whether to see that movie, because it's time for the real talk segment of Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. Keeping in mind, I've only been able to bear Schindler's List in bits and bobs.
I've never watched it.
Yeah.
Because I can't handle...
Well, it's obviously a well-made movie. It's unbearable, isn't it? And I say this as someone who watched Sorrow and the Pity in one sitting.
I watched Shoah.
Yeah.
And I've seen other... Like, I saw the movie on Sobibor, and then recently I watched... Liev Schreiber gets angry in the woods about the Belarusians.
Right, yeah.
And I think the problem...
So,
The scope and the magnitude of the horror is what keeps me from that movie, and it's gotten worse now that I have kids.
Yeah. My point is...
children and everything.
With the caveat that I have not ever sat through Schindler's List entirely, I would argue that Steven Spielberg's two greatest movies are Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
Jaws by a mile, and his second greatest movie is Jurassic Park.
You know, I think you're right, and I think I would love to find out what it says about him that his most compelling movies are Man vs. Nature, because E.T. is number three on my list.
Yeah, I'd put that number three, and I'd put maybe Raiders as number four.
No, Close Encounters.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Close.
You're wrong.
Yeah, no.
But anyhow.
Because Richard Dreyfuss saves that movie.
The reason why I went off on this tangent was not just to derail the podcast, which is why I go on most tangents than I do.
I'm not sure this podcast is on a rail so much as it is just kind of a quantum cloud.
It's a rail laid by a drunken man who broke the rail in many places and is trying to cover up his malfeasance. my point being, I'm torn on whether to go see Jurassic World because I love Jurassic Park so much. Yes. I really think that's a great movie.
Oh. You know why it's a great movie, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Because they used models.
They used models.
Instead of
CGI. It doesn't
they had
look,
some. They had some.
They had some,
they
but
had
it does
some, but...
But it doesn't look fake and phony. You don't...
No.
Whereas you and I were... Again, we were watching Godzilla, and it looks so fake and phony.
Well, because they got the physics wrong in Godzilla. Like, if you have an animal as big as Godzilla swimming through the naval fleet, they're not just going to rock back and forth gently.
Oh, that's like, creating some waves.
Well,
no.
You and I used to take a catamaran ferry from Alameda to San Francisco every day on our commute, and like every time just a yacht went by that ferry, it would rock back and forth for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
like if something Godzilla size had come by, we would have been upside down underwater in some horrible, you know, we would have been trapped. It would have been awful.
Exactly.
So No, and it just looks fake. The great thing, though, is it's the tactile quality, because there's
precisely.
They haven't figured out with CGI yet how to cross that uncanny valley. Like, you can still figure out when something is CGI and when it is not. And that was actually another thing that bothered me about The Avengers, is when I watched that, you could basically see the actors doing the actorly thing where, and now I pretend I'm punching a robot, now I pretend I'm flinging arrows at a robot, now I pretend I'm doing my psychic mind bolts at a robot. And, like, it's these, all I could think was, I'm going to see a behind-the-scenes clip, and it's going to be these poor suckers in a green room, like, looking all serious while men with ping-pong balls all over their parts run around them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that took me right out of the moment. Whereas with Jurassic Park, even though you could watch and be like, oh, it's Stan Winston, he's got three puppeteers making the Triceratops breathe, like, you watch that later, but the point is every time I see the scene where Laura Dern is all excited about a sick Triceratops...
Yeah.
She's laying on an animal that's breathing on her, and there's breath coming out.
It looks like a real thing.
Yeah, and so I really hope that this Jurassic Park, they did the same thing.
That said, if they do an opener where all the velociraptors dance with Chris Pratt, like the opening of Kung Fu Hustle, I am totally there.
Yes,
because I am there with bells on.
The opening of Kung Fu Hustle with the Axe Gang dancing is one of the best openings. I think you and I basically clapped in the theater when we saw that.
Yep.
Because it was just the greatest opening ever.
Yep.
Why isn't Stephen Chow making more movies?
I have no idea. Why? There's probably some horrible reason.
Oh, God. No, we're not going to check Wikipedia for it.
Nope. I'm just assuming he's decided to move on with
his life. Or maybe he's like, you know, the Chinese market is a lot bigger than the U.S. market. I'm just going to stick with
it. So Jurassic World, that was a trailer.
So Jurassic World was a trailer. There was Tom Cruise back in Mission Impossible, whatever.
Yep. Okay, sure.
Which, it looks like they're really amping up. Simon Pegg is your comic relief.
I've only ever seen the first one. Way back when, the Brian De Palma one.
I could have sworn you and I saw the one that has Simon Pegg and Paula... What's her face?
Directed by our dear friend Brad Bird, who we just slandered. I've only seen...
Because the most recent one I saw did have Scotty from Star Trek.
Simon Pegg, by yourself or with someone who's more enjoyable than me. I've only ever seen the first one, because the first one was not a good movie.
Well, the last one has Tom Cruise, like, scaling the side of a wall like Spider-Man with suction cups, and it's all very dramatic. So in this one, he's shirtless because that's what you want to see, right? Yeah. And there's more fighting with yet another disposable woman, because why would you bother keeping the females consistent from
the movie? We've had this discussion not on the podcast, but and I apologize to listeners if we've done this on the podcast, but when do Tom Cruise is what, 50?
He's in his 50s.
Yeah, he's in his 50s. At what point do they tap you on the shoulder and say,
put on a shirt?
Yeah, you're done being an action hero, because if
your nipples are even with your belly button, nobody needs to see that.
This was the thought I had when I watched the Get Carter remake with Sylvester Stallone, and there's a scene where he and Mickey Rourke are fighting each other, and I believe on a different podcast, in the Incomparable Network, it's like two sides of beef just slapping into each other.
Oh, that's awful.
Oh, no. And it put me off of meat for like 2 months.
I don't know. I don't want to. The thing is you don't want to be ageist necessarily, because Liam Neeson is doing okay as an action hero who keeps his clothes on and uses guile and resentment.
Well, I think of Clint Eastwood, who made In the Line of Fire in 1993, and they at least had the good sense. That entire movie was, oh God, I am old and I cannot do this anymore. And that's what gave the movie its poignancy.
Yeah. Yeah, is the idea that you're now the oldest lion in the troop, as it were. Well, it's depressing because we just saw the trailer for Terminator with Arnold Schwarzenegger, so that was awful.
Yep.
Well, that was actually the premise of Red, which I really liked as a movie, which was all you had all these retired agents who basically spent the whole time creaking around all, I'm too old to do this. And exemplified the post-it that in the end, old age and guile will be youth and inexperience. Yep. The Tom Cruise thing I find unnerving just because it is so, look at me, I still have the body of a 35-year-old!
I'm still young and vibrant!
Yeah, it's just, it seems a little weirdly out of touch.
Yeah.
So between this and Rock of Ages, you're just like, dude, shirt on, please. Congratulations on not having had carbs since 2002, but... No one needs to see it. Put it away. So there was that. And I think that was about it. Oh, okay. Ant-Man. Ant-Man was the last one I saw.
Oh, boy. Another comic book movie.
I can't get excited about it.
Nope.
Because, you know, this time they are going to blow up San Francisco. And it'll be the freaking Golden Gate Bridge again.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, just once, what I want to have happen is they do blow up the Golden Gate Bridge, like, say, Ant-Man 1. Mm-hmm. And when they do Ant-Man 2, more ants, or whatever it is,
yeah.
You see that Tom Amiano come back to do a cameo as the mayor of San Francisco, and he screams, "We're not rebuilding the Golden Gate! It just keeps getting knocked down by supervillains and monsters!"
Yeah.
And then San Francisco has to go to a Zodiac-based economy to get people back and forth to Marin.
I would like them to blow up the parts of San Francisco I don't like or go to.
Hmm.
Fisherman's Wharf. No one goes to Fisherman's Wharf who needs to be saved.
Well, there's a Ghirardelli's outlet in San Leandro. I say go. All right, what are parts of San Francisco? Oh, you know what we could do to get
Candlestick Park. It's a ghost town in the
L. Blowing up Candlestick
Park.
Well,
this will help.
I feel like
superheroes.
I feel like you could blow up the marina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Chrissy Field, all those people getting smug about taking Instagrams of the fog coming in.
Yeah.
Would you blow up the mission? Or do you think that would just get the NIMBYs back up?
No, because there are some good burritos in the mission.
Yeah.
Hmm. They gave us good burritos.
They gave us burritos. I would blow up Noe Valley.
Oh, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Maybe Bernal Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd accept that.
All the places that rapidly gentrified and pushed out my friends get blown up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The drum circle at Golden Gate Park.
Oh, dude. See, then now you have to blow up Dolores Park then, because there's a dude that sells pot truffles. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so basically what we're saying is that San Francisco is going to have several large lakes.
wherever the Google bus picks people up, blow that part up.
There's a Google bus picking people up a mile from our house, honey.
Oh, well, spare them.
Yeah. So yeah, Ant-Man's coming out. And the problem is, I like Brian. I like Paul Rudd when he's being Brian Fontana. Or yeah. When he's being an amiable hippie in My Idiot Brother. Or, excuse me, Our Idiot Brother, it's called, which is a funny movie that you should watch for Kathryn Hahn, if nothing else. And I like him when he's being, like, the thing is you look at him and you can tell he went on the superhero diet. And again, he hasn't had a beer since last year sometime. And, like, his face is now shaped differently because there's no fat left on it. And they give the shirtless shot. And it's just really, I kind of hate when they take actors and stamp them into the action hero mold. And I get that when you're an actor, your body is your instrument and all that, but it's still weird to see that happen to Brian Fontana.
This is why I've always advocated for a Booster Gold movie.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause part of the fun with Booster Gold is you could get someone with a John C. Reilly body.
You could get John Hamm as Booster Gold, and I would watch that movie three times a day on opening weekend.
But you wouldn't need someone to slim down to play Booster Gold, because the entire point of Booster Gold is that he's a fraud.
Yeah, a time-traveling fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're never going to make a Booster Gold movie.
No. Then I will never go see another comic book movie, just to bring this full circle.
No.
When they make Booster Gold, or when they finally buy my spec script... When they buy my spec script for Lantern Corps.
Yes.
My Lantern Corps script. I have one.
By the way, they really messed up when they did not make The Rock play Kilowog.
Kilowog, yeah. But that's another podcast.
Very sad. Indeed, I'm it was. Sure. All right, so to bring this full circle, we've ruined the Avengers.
So here's who whose work we've savaged tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've not been kind to him.
There's a price on our head now, you realize.
The tubby fellow who played Quicksilver. He's
I want to stress he's a fine actor, they're just the wrong one for the job.
Niki Lauda is never going to speak to us again.
He wasn't speaking to us before.
Well, more's the pity.
Yeah. We also made fun of Ron Howard's work.
Steven Spielberg, I think, is going to take issue with a lot of things said tonight.
No, we talked
Brad about Bird is he, not going Steven to return Spielberg. My calls at all Steven, for Lantern Corps.
Steven Spielberg excels in Man vs. Nature movies. That's
yeah, we said nice things about Steven
exactly,
Spielberg.
Exactly, yeah. Just because we also said, and we didn't see your pinnacle achievement because it's a bummer.
It's kind of a bummer, that movie.
No, it was when I saw the coat from, I saw a clip where it had a coat from a little girl.
We're trying to end on a light note.
Okay, yeah. I think we savaged Captain America too, took a lazy swipe at it.
Yep.
And then we pitied Tom Cruise for his weird disconnection reality.
I'll never make the next level at the Church of Scientology.
We haven't made a level at the Church of Scientology yet.
Well,
so
I dream big.
I read Going Clear last year, babe. You were not going anywhere near the Church of Scientology.
And I don't think David Mamet would much care for us. But David Mamet, to be fair, has gone insane in recent years. So,
oh God, what if David Mamet hears this and decides to launch his own superhero movie espousing his new values?
Well, I wouldn't be seeing it because, of course, I don't go see superhero movies. Take that, Mamet!
Indeed. Well, there you go. I think you've solved a lot of problems with your comprehensive ban on superhero movies.
I have.
Yeah.
I encourage other audience members to take the pledge.
Yes, I would also encourage other audience members to give us their interpretations of the Avengers as seen through the eyes of other directors. We've listed the Coen brothers, Mamet, Tarantino,
Woody Allen.
We would like to see what auteurs you would like to see do the Avengers and how you think they'd put their own inimitable spin on it. Would it be a Hal Hartley movie where Martin Donovan just looks very sad for 30 minutes? Would it be a Jim Jarmusch movie where no one knows what's going on? Would it be a Werner Herzog film where he just, like, films runes and talks about human perfidy? Like, tell us. Tweet us. We'd love to hear from you.
Suggest which movies we should ruin next. Mm-hmm. We read all suggestions. We ignore them, but we read them.
Yeah, sometimes they work for us.
No. Mm-hmm. They work for you.
Yeah. And we are going to do our best to try to podcast more than once a quarter.
Yep. Our next episode is coming in August. Book your calendar then.
All right. And thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yep. Do you want to wrap this up?
I just did by thanking people for listening because I appreciate it.
Do you want to say who you are?
Oh, well, I'm Lisa Schmeiser.
And I'm your host, Philip Michaels. Thank you for listening to my podcast. I think that went well.
I think the awkward silence should tell you something. Good night.